I'm Bill Cundiff. Come, I couldn't hear you.
I don't know. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so it's still We the People Radio, and I'm still Aaron Ryan. However, our website at wethepeopleradio.us is, I don't know, what do we call it?
Out of commission.
It's in suspended animation. It's trapped in last week. It couldn't move on. And I just want you to know it had nothing to do with the idiotic hearing in the House of Representatives. It's totally disconnected. I do think maybe it had something to do with a program on China. And then there was a major hack situation that happened. And then our web server shut everything off.
Are you sure someone's not trying to impeach you?
No, but I've got a bunch of dumb answers for them if they'd like.
Yeah, because that's the thing now. Everybody's got to be impeached.
I guess you'll have to impeach me. Yeah. But you can still get our phone number and our email addresses at wethepeopleradio.us. So that's still on there. The website is actually up. But if you want to see information about our guest and you are listening on the 29th of September, 2019, you're going to have to look at last week. Until I can get that squared away. So we thought, well, in light of the fact that apparently the Chinese liked our show so much, they felt the need to screw up our website. And they actually hacked Bill's email address, which was sort of funny. They made a whole bunch of fake emails. It was Q1 at ibcundiff.com, Q2, Q3, Q4, Q5. I'm like, well, that's not really very clever. So they get demerits for cleverness. But anyway, they made a bunch of fake emails, and I don't know what they were doing with them. But maybe while we're on the air,
maybe they're going to fix it. They're going to send me a prize.
Maybe they could go fix it and update the page for today. Since they're the only ones that can get in, I'm locked out. So we will post the commercial-free archive and all that good stuff just as soon as we can. But if you're looking at it as we're airing live and you're going, what the heck is wrong with these guys? Why are they saying to be announced? It's because we can't get there from here. So our guest is... again, the fabulous Dr. Chen, and he's just got a ton of information. We only had him on for an hour last week, and we were talking about his background and his story of how he wound up coming to this country, and there was just a lot more information that we needed to share. So let's see. I'm gonna skip around here on his bio, because I didn't get to some fun things last time. So he began his activism in 1989, and upon learning about the brutal persecution of the Falun Gong in China, he founded the Falun Gong Human Rights Working Group in 2001 and has since submitted over 100,000 cases of human rights abuses against Falun Gong practitioners to the UN Special Reporters. He's also the president of the Conscience Foundation, a nonprofit organization to publicize and remind people that human conscience is the very essence of humanity, which I'm sure makes him incredibly popular in China. So this is all about popularity today. And he's spoken extensively on the issue of human rights in China. And since 2001, he has frequented meetings of the UN Human Rights Commission in Geneva, now the Human Rights Council, spoken to the council, to special reporters, and many forums following the cases of human rights. And then I wanted to skip down to this other part. Oh, in 2005, Dr. Chen conceived the idea of the Courageous People, Spirited Land TV series, and he implemented the project. The programs have since become very popular in China, where viewers have been disseminating them, defying the Chinese regime's prohibition. So it's kind of all about defying the Chinese, I guess. Apparently that's what we're doing today. We're just defying the Chinese. He was born. How great is that, huh?
Yeah. They can knock our website off, but we're still going to defy.
But we still got last week, see, so we still have your bio on there. And what we talked about last week, we're not going to go through that in its entirety, but I would encourage you to listen because it's really interesting. He was born in China in 1962 and at the age of 15 entered the gifted program at the China University of Science and Technology. And there's a whole lot more to that. Very interesting. Came to the U.S. in 1982 to study and received his Ph.D. in molecular biology at the University of California, San Diego. Currently owns and runs a molecular biology startup in San Diego. That'll be the part that no matter how many times we have you on, we'll never get to that. We'll just leave you to that, since that's not something we're good at.
So one thing we didn't talk about last week was the Chinese government paid to have you come over here and go to college, and then you stayed. How did that go over? I mean, probably weren't too happy about
that. That's not my choice. It's actually not my choice.
Oh, okay.
I am not allowed to go back to China, put it simply.
Oh. Persona non grata. You got the persona non grata award, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
So, what happened? Well, I'll talk about, you know, how I was. But what happened after 1989, because my activism, I was elected as the vice president of the Independent Federation of Chinese Students and Scholars in the United States. At that time, that was the largest pro-democracy organization, Chinese pro-democracy organization in the United States. And we have done, as an organization, we have done many things that that threatened the Chinese government. And that earned me a spot in their blacklist. They have a long blacklist or a short one. I'm on the short one. And as time goes by, many of my friends were slowly delisted from, you know, the blacklist. But many times they would come back from China, and not, since they're off on the blacklist, they were able to go back to China. But then, after they came back, they would tell me, "Don't come back yet. You cannot come back yet because even though they were taken off on the blacklist, they were able to go back to China. But they will be visited by this national security whatever agent, and then apparently they still." Would interrogate them about the situation, you know, who's who, you know, what they're doing in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still their target. So that's why they know that I'm still on the blacklist.
So they never contacted you and said, don't come back. You just kind of heard
through
the grapevine that you can't go back.
Well, they won't let you. They won't let you to go back, and they have waived to not let you to go back. So I have friends. I did not have to. Fortunately, I did not have to go through those ordeals. But I have some friends who are need to go back to China because their parents, you know, were you know, very ill, and they want to see their son or daughter, you know, for the last time. And yet the Chinese government wouldn't allow them to go back.
Wow.
And some has landed in China in the airplane, but then they were forced back to the United States. So that's how the government let them know they're not welcome there. They're
right.
Not wanted there.
Right. We've got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to stay on that vein for just a little bit longer. I had a couple other questions for you.
Okay.
Keep going, Bill.
No.
You're doing good.
No, you're all right.
You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
So you heard kind of through the grapevine that you could not go back to China. At that point, you weren't a U.S. citizen, but you couldn't go back to China. So where'd that leave you?
Okay, that's a very interesting question, and it's that has a story within a story. So, Chinese students at that time, like after the Cultural Revolution, most of us were very traditional. I was like that. We were very patriotic. I still really remember, vividly remember, you know, the first month after I came to the United States, I studied in the first school, the first graduate school I attended to was the Cornell Medical School. That's not in Ithaca, but in Manhattan. And there were only two Chinese scholars of the whole visiting scholars. Actually, one. The other one is in Sloan Kettering. Okay. So there were only two Chinese from mainland in the whole in a big campus. And when I came, one of them who came before me a year ahead of me gave me a book. Inawo, which is about, which described the lives of the Taiwan students, but that's in German, you know, how they study abroad in German. And inside it described a story about a student from Israel, a girl from Israel, in that story. She went to study in German, and she carried a Israel flag and posted it at the wall of her bed. And so the Taiwan student in the novel was curious about it, and then I asked her, why is she doing that? And she said, because even though I am studying in German in a safe environment, I cannot forget the fact that my fatherland is under attack every minute. And when I read to that, I literally cried my heart out, because that is exactly how I felt. That was 1981, in October 1981. When I got to that part, you know, it was actually pretty late at night. And we were told that we were educated in China, when we were in China, that the United States is a horrible place, it's hell, that there's so dangerous, it's, you know, it's only for the rich people to have a life, for the poor people, it's a hell. And the public safety is terrible, everything's terrible. And I didn't care. When I just finished that novel, it was middle of the night, it's 2 a.m., and I just had to get myself out of my dormitory. I have to get on the street, no matter how dangerous it was. I was ready to be killed. I was so emotional, because when I came to the United States, I have one thing in my mind. That is, I will learn all the things I can learn from the United States and take them back to serve my country, to serve my people. And that's what I came here for. And so I knew how backward my country was. And so that was why that touched me so deeply. I cried through that novel. And after finish at 2 a.m., I just couldn't care anything. I just have to let my emotion out. I just walk Manhattan at middle of the night at 2 a.m. And it just happened that night. It was a full moon. I look up to the sky, and the moon is bright because the air is cleaner. There's less pollution. Unfortunately, that's true. There's less
pollution. You can actually see the moon?
Yeah, the moon is very bright, and you can see, you know, those, you know, volcano, whatever structure in it. And I, there just happens, there is a Chinese saying. It's similar to that the grass in other people's yard is greener, that kind of saying.
Sure.
But the equivalent saying is the moon in foreign countries are brighter. It's a sarcasm. Sarcasm. I mean, to laugh at those people who, you know, just try to escape their responsible boy for their motherland, right?
And it accidentally turned out to be true?
Yeah. So I look at the sky.
Oh, my gosh.
And found it to be, the moon is brighter, is bigger, appeared to be bigger than in China. And I was, my heart was filled with resentment. I said, God damn it, why your moon is, I mean, United States, why your moon is brighter and bigger? I'm going to make my moon in China bigger and brighter. That was me. I was just full of idealism and patriotism. And that was what got me into trouble in the first place in the 1989 student movement, because that is for my people. And so later there's a, there's some student who wants to do a documentary on Chinese students studying the United States, and they selected this part of my story into their documentary. But so I have done quite well in my academic studies, and my advisor oftentimes asks me, you know, what's your plan? You should continue on your academic study, because, you know, you really think I am a very good researcher. And so he was trying to talk me into applying for, you know, green card to stay in the United States. At the beginning, it was like an insult to me. So I know his intention's good. He doesn't mean any harm, but to me, I want to go back to serve my country. I am not interested in your country. Is good enough. You don't need my help. My country needs my help. And so I always reject it with an attitude. And so after a while, the whole lab knows what kind of person I am. But then 1989 changed that. That got me onto the blacklist. I cannot go back to China. But then the massacre happened. The Congress passed a law after the June 4th massacre and give protection to the student in the United States, because most of them participate in what I mentioned earlier, IFCSS, Independent Federation of Chinese Students and Scholars. A lot of them have participated in that activity. And so the Congress passed a bill. The old Bush vetoed that bill, but because it's so overwhelmingly passed, he vetoed that bill, but replaced it with his own executive order to allow the student at that time to stay in the United States. And so they got protection from the United States. So I was able to extend my stay, and still, I did not want to become U.S. citizen. I still want to go back to China to serve my country. And even now, if I can go back to serve my country, I would go back, you know, with no second thought. but I cannot. But how then later, quite a few years later, about in 2004 or 5, around 2002, and I started to apply to become a naturalized citizen. And that it was one article. Again, I cried after reading it because it talked about a particular kind of swallow, a bird, okay? How the bird was hunted to extinction in China. And when I read that, I felt so ashamed that I'm associated with that kind of country. I thought, okay, we're people. We're Chinese people. We unfortunately have this evil government to rule our lives. And we're unfortunate. And some of the people oppose the government, and face whatever consequences. But the birds, what crime did they commit? Why would they hunt it to extinction? And that was the moment that I felt so ashamed. And I literally was looking for, in Chinese, there's a saying that, if there's a slit in the ground, I would burrow myself into it to hide myself. That's how I felt. I felt so ashamed. I was looking for a place to hide because I feel so guilty as a Chinese to the birds that I would hunt to extinction.
It's so interesting that it's like the little things along the way, things that, I mean, how many times have we all, in the United States or other countries, looked up, we've seen the moon, see birds. I mean, all these things are very common, and yet they are pivotal points for you. We've got to take a really quick break, and then we'll come right back. But we're here with Dr. Chen. We're discussing his journey, I guess, really. The trip itself, I think, was probably an airplane flight, but the journey of coming to America and being here. And we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Pushing me around, but I'll stand my ground, and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand my ground, and I won't.
Okay, there we go. All right, so I think the thing with the birds is something that was it discussed much in your country? How did you even know?
I read it through a magazine called China. It's an electronic magazine, China News Digest. It's another organization that has a big impact among Chinese students in the United States. That's also started by a group of Chinese students, connected with the 1989 student movement. The 1989 student movement has played a important, probably the most important role for that generation of Chinese students in the United States. But it has not been studied enough. I want to go back to, my little story is really a small story amongst a large chain in China. I myself, because my study, because I was chosen as a role model for the Chinese authority to write education, and how I graduated ahead of schedule, how I, came to the United States. So that part of the story became a inspirational story for other young kids. So they were written into textbook. They're written into, like inspiration material for the young kids to learn. But that was before my activism is known to the Chinese government. And my part in the student movement is small enough that, even though I got to the blacklist of the Chinese government, it has little impact in the society. But then later, when I founded the Falun Gong Human Rights Working Group, when I brought this human rights violation cases to the international stage, the impact is much bigger. And my name gets onto the internet, and the authority, the Chinese government, went to the extreme to retrieve those textbooks, to retrieve basically to eliminate, try to wipe out my story. And now my story used to be all over the place. Now in China, you won't be able to find it.
Oh, no kidding. You've been erased.
Yeah.
Well, no wonder they enjoyed the show so much last week.
And
that's making more sense now.
I haven't forgot about that. I was going to make a comment that Bill, as soon as you're going to get to the bad side of the the Chinese regime, you start to live dangerously. And I'm not joking.
No, we did. We actually did a show a few months, like 2 months ago, maybe. I don't remember if it was with June or so. Oh, no, it was with Mary Todd. It was about her son, Shane Todd, who was, he magically committed suicide when he decided to leave China.
Yeah, I know her.
Yeah.
I know the story.
And as soon as we aired that show, suddenly all sorts of interesting things started happening online.
Yeah. So one fact that not many people know, that there's this thing called stability maintenance organization or mechanism in China.
Oh.
So this is a government machinery under the so-called political legal commission. It's a party function, the Chinese Communist Party function. It consumes the largest government spending, outspending our national defense, our military. What does that tell you?
Wow.
That tells you that the government view its people more threatening than any foreign army, foreign invasion. The so-called stability maintenance is completely targeted internally. that the uprisings internal from the people. So when a government only view its own people as a greater danger than foreign nation, they will have to spend more money on that. That tells you how counterproductive that regime is, how much resources wasted against its own citizens. And the hacking or silencing of any foreign voices, influences, goes under that that spending, the maintain the stability maintenance expenditure. And so congratulations to you. You now just get onto their list.
We just met
the team.
What are they called? The Department of Stability?
No, it's called the Stability Maintenance Mechanism.
That's catchy. No wonder I couldn't remember it.
Yeah, Stability Maintenance Mechanism.
Wow. So all they do is go around and make sure that nobody says anything bad.
Right. Right.
Is that where the social scores and all those kinds of things, is that fit kind of in their purview?
The social score, the facial recognition, all the so-called interception of petitioners, all goes under it. In Hong Kong is a hot topic now. What's going on in Hong Kong goes under it as well.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. But this so-called maintenance mechanism, or stability maintenance, is a self-expanding mechanism. Why it sucks so much resources into it? It's because to maintain its expansion, it creates instability. So there would be a need for the stability maintenance. Right?
You have a whole group of people that are out there like fake causing trouble so that they can have more people to silence them.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
And that's what's going on in
Perfect.
Hong Kong. That's what's going on in Hong Kong. Many of the so-called the protests, those of, flame, strong bomb throwing, those are not the peaceful petitioners or protesters. Those are actually government agents.
Oh.
They're of trouble.
Yeah.
So
we stink at this. We didn't see that right off. we're apparently not very good at this. It's like, oh, yeah.
Yes, because, it's very difficult for people outside of China or people who haven't lived under that system to understand the twisted way of how that regime thinks.
Yeah, it's like common sense in reverse.
Right, right.
Wow.
And they would just, you put it beautifully. So the government would stir up more trouble, so it would have more need to stamp out the trouble.
Perfect. Wow. It takes quite a mechanism to actually think that up and make that okay. I mean, everybody has to basically agree to that. So it isn't like a tiny group in your government. That if that's the largest department and that's their standard operating procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
And this is a newer mechanism. This is not traditional. That is not even old communism. Soviet didn't have that. The East Bloc didn't have that. And this is a newer invention of the modern day communism. It really came about after 1992. When this is not well studied, not publicized.
I can imagine why. I mean, obviously, if as a country, you wouldn't exactly want everybody to know this, because then, I mean, now you watch, we'll watch all the protests, the footage on protests, and be like, oh, look at that guy right there. I wonder what he's doing, if he's part of it. Shoot, we have to take a really quick break here. We're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Chen, and we are chatting about China and, you know, how we got ourselves on the naughty list. So early, too. It's not even Christmas. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Probably even see the moon if you wait a few hours. So, you know, on that particular topic there, when you said you had never really seen the moon clear like that before, could you see stars? I mean, had you seen stars before?
Yeah, in countryside. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So if you get out of town a ways, but isn't being sent to the countryside a bad thing there? You can go to the countryside, but you don't want to be sent there. Somebody was telling us their relatives got sent to the countryside, which was like,
Yeah, the life in China. There were actually a period of time that that youngsters were sent to the countryside. I was actually almost, if the culture. Didn't end, I would be sent to countryside myself.
Which is basically kind of like Siberia. I mean, you're incarcerated. You're not actually, you know, picnicking, right?
Yeah. And the world didn't know the real reason for it is because they not provide job for a younger generation. So they exile them to the countryside.
Oh, well, of course. If you have too many workers, you just... Get rid of them.
Well,
what a nuisance.
They're facing that problem now.
Yikes.
So, we were talking about that. You really have to take a twist of mind to understand the regime. So, I found a way to explain it. Let me ask you a question. Maybe a twisting question. So, do you think it's easier to govern animals, or it's easier to govern human beings?
I'm kind of a problem child. I'm thinking, well, are they big animals? Are they small? Are we talking puppies? Are we looking at giraffes? No, I mean,
yeah.
I
doesn't matter. Even the worst animals is the most fierce animal. You know, tiger.
Totally,
lion,
people.
Like,
because yeah, people are always trying to figure out how to get out of it.
Mm-hmm. So you would think, you know, we human, you know, are easier to reason with, to govern them would be easier. Actually, animals are easier to govern.
You can kind of scare them and they stay scared.
Yeah. I mean, look, how many, you can herd a large group of animals, right?
Look at sheep.
Millions of them.
Or sheep.
Just a few people is enough to herd a large herd. That's exactly what the Chinese regime are trying to do. They govern by dehumanizing humans. And unfortunately, and they're not going to like what I'm saying, I see The socialism movement is going towards that direction.
Yeah.
Dehumanizing human. Right? What's the difference between human and animal? That we have a conscience. And the best way to dehumanize human is to remove their conscience. And the best way, one of the best ways to eliminate conscience, to just make our dreams die, is to give you a lofty ideal and then show you that ideal is just a phony. To burst that big bubble, that's the best way to destroy it. And that's what the communism has done. That it the communism claim it's the highest ideal is the utopia.
Right. Everybody is taken care of. Nobody struggles. You don't have any homeless.
Right.
Everything is fair. I mean, anybody who's been through second grade knows that's a lie.
Yeah. Doesn't that sound familiar?
Yes.
Medicare for everyone?
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. It's just a baby step. Baby step.
Oh, don't forget
that.
The climate. Don't forget climate control. It's just like having a giant thermostat on the earth. We just swivel the dial and, you know.
Yeah.
We'll be able to control that. You won't have any more wind or any more of those dopey rainstorms that cause all these problems or, you know, a lot of bad snow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to fix all of it.
So the regime, the party, the CCP give you that, you know, lofty idealism. And then they act to destroy it in front of you. They roll in a tank to destroy everything. And that burst your... the young generation, the whole nation's idealistic bubble. And that's the best way to kill dreams.
Sure.
And it tells you everything is false.
It's also a really good way, although I'm sure the percentage of people that fall into this category are somewhat smaller, but it's a terrific way to create opposition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, you have a whole bunch of them wringing their hands. You have this other group that's out there sharpening sticks. Like, all right, fix you.
Mm-hmm.
So just since you've already been through this with professionals, the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, all these people that are, you know, rolling out this socialist pipe dream. I mean, I think they stink at it, but, I mean, do you think they have any skills there? Are they good at this? Are they good at selling it, you think, based on maybe what you've seen?
It's not that they're good at selling it. It is more about the people of this country.
Yeah,
well,
that's true.
Well, the combination of the people in this country not having been exposed to what the reality would be, but it also has a lot to do with media. I remember we discussed in our previous year that media cannot be treated as regular business, because any business or any entity that carries public trust has a moral responsibility because it carries the public trust. Media now treats their news or their reporting as product. But news and news reporting, these are not products. You know, iPhone is a product. Car is a product. We can decide what product we manufacture, what we make, what we sell. But news media, if we select what we can sell, it's very easy to manipulate the public. Right, and now we see they're more reporting how Google, how they can, you know, twist their search engine, and we would get bias results, and that is a breach of public trust. It's very, very serious, and unfortunately, the public. Well, we start to, you know, the public started picking up on that. But the severity of this crime has not been properly addressed. News News media cannot be treated as regular business. They should not be able to decide their product. Once they decide, you know, this product is not good for us, from us making money, then they have manipulated the public trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a part to do with, even though I don't think they're good at it, but they get it going. It doesn't matter, you know, whether...
That's true. I guess you don't have to have great skill if you can get the ball rolling and you can get the media to sell it for you in the background.
Exactly. That's the problem, okay? And so, let me give you an example of that, okay? How that would be manipulated. I just share with my own experience how I was patriotic, okay? The nationalism, the patriotism in China has been manipulated to the extreme. But that patriotism in China is not patriotic. Patriotism is a love. In China, it's not a love. It's actually, I call it hatredism.
Hatredism.
Yeah, because it's not about love. It's about hate. You know,
they don't love the country. They just hate everybody else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we were
kind
taught.
Of an interesting way
we
to
were
that
told.
Happen.
Yeah, yeah, and we don't see the damage of it. Okay. Now, this relates to what's going on in the United States.
Yeah.
Okay? Love is supposed to be even, right? Love should not be a sentiment. At the expense of some people. Love should be universal, right? Yet, the socialism, you know, what you're doing now, they are using love for a certain group.
Sure, we can love you, but then, you know what, because of that, we got to hate you.
Yeah.
How unfortunate for you. We've got to take a quick break, oddly enough, for the news. little news break. And we'll be back with our guest, Dr. Chen. And you can find everything about the program at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. Welcome to the second half of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And our program is airing live on September 29th, 2019. We are here with the second hour with our guest, Dr. Chen. And just a little programming note, if you are listening to us live and you go to the website, you will notice that it says it's to be announced for today. Not really. We were preempted by a little hacking situation after our program last week. So should have that figured out tomorrow. But for the time being, I won't be able to post the commercial-free archive or any of that. But if you're listening here today and you wanted to hear the program again or send it to someone, you can always go to kcnr1460.com, and it is there for 12 o'clock noon, We the People Radio. So there we go. There's our programming note for today. Okay.
There you are.
And I do hope people will go to the site. You can also, if you're listening today, you can go to September 22nd and read about our guest. He was on the second hour last week, and we just kind of had too much to talk about, so we had to do it again. Dr. Chen, I wanted to ask you that, like, I didn't want to leave the topic that you started at the end of the last hour too quickly, that instead of patriotism, the Chinese government kind of took a spin on that and created like a hatredism. So in order to be, I guess, support your country, you had to, instead of loving the country you were in, you kind of had to hate the other ones?
Yeah. And don't think that's too far from the reality in this country.
It isn't. It's kind of why I didn't want to leave.
Our love just contrasts some people's love for undocumented or illegal immigrants contrasts that with their hatred to ICE.
Yeah, true.
And contrast their love for one group with how they want to change the history. They would knock out the statues. They, you know, if we think that's too far away from reality, look no further than the Chinese community in the United States. I always say that, you know, the communism or CCP, the Chinese workers, the Chinese Communist Party is the only remaining main communist power in the world. If we think it's far away, think again. That this regime has entered deeply into our country. It has actually destroyed a community, particular community in our country, the Chinese community. But it's not being recognized. Over the years, many of my friends, you know, Democrats and Republican alike, they have asked me and my Chinese friends to mobilize the Chinese community to vote for their candidate. This very fact indicates that they, you know, Democrats or Republican alike, they're not at all aware of the CCP's utter destruction of the Chinese community in the United States. You know, several programs ago, we talked about the generous barbarism that the CCP uses to influence, you know, our elected officials, the non-Chinese, you know, elected officials, congressmen and you know, business and things that, like that. If they have power to influence non-Chinese, you know, elected officials' business, think about it, what you will have to control the Chinese community, right? And we talked about 1,000 talent, you know, the CCP's Grow program to attract professors, you know, scholars and to work for the CCP's interest, right? So there are many reports how they have been used. Well, these are well-off Chinese immigrants. These are the top of, you know, the top of the Chinese community. If they can be manipulated, controlled by the CCP, imagine the plight of less fortunate Chinese immigrants in this country. The hatredism, you know, the CCP's persecution of different Chinese groups has caused a deep divide within Chinese community in this country. Other than their country of origin, now there's not even a Chinese community in the United States to speak of. There exists not a common celebration. It's surprising, right? There's not even our traditional, you know, festival, the spring festival. Different Chinese group would have a celebration, you know. It's not a one celebration. There would be a Taiwanese celebration. There would be, you know, mainland Chinese celebration. Yeah? Even the common festival would be broke up. So there's not a common celebration, not a common cause, not even a common cultural or ethnic event to participate.
Well, I would imagine it's very difficult when you don't know, well, when there's so much infiltration from the CCP, right, and all these organizations, you don't really know who you're talking to or what.
They hate each other.
Yeah. Exactly.
They're manipulating to hate each other. How can they celebrate together? The majority of mainland Chinese still immigrants, they hate all those who do not conform to the CCP ideology. So they hate the Falun Gong people. They hate the, you know, the underground church people. They hate Tibetan. They hate Uyghurs, right? And one, you know, the Taiwan immigrants, you know, a portion of Taiwan immigrants refuse to recognize their ties with China. And those who do, you know, recognize their ties with China, then they hate each other. Tibetan Uyghurs, they disdain those from China. So all of this mistrust, this hatred, has shattered the Chinese community, to the point that no one can even come close to represent even a portion of the Chinese community.
Well, it's a great way to make sure no support for like the students that are protesting or the people in Hong Kong. Right. Let's make sure that there's no support over here because everybody's afraid of who's watching who.
You just said it.
Jeez.
And that's done.
Yeah.
For purpose. The CCP.
Yeah, that's pretty smart, actually.
The CCP is the only force that can, you know, control the Chinese community. You know, we talk about Russian meddling of our election.
Hmm. They got a long way to go before they get to the Chinese Communist Party.
the Chinese Communist Party has gone way beyond that. It has already entered into the fabrics of our Chinese community. They control it. And that's the damage. That's done. And yet, we don't even recognize it. The Obama administration didn't do enough to, if there's a Russian meddling, it didn't do enough, right? In this case, it definitely didn't do anything.
Yeah,
about
no, nothing.
The CCP's manipulation, the destruction of our Chinese community. Now, if the CCP can destroy one of our community of the United States, it can do more.
Sure.
And it's the social, the progressive program, they're not too far from the communists. It's a baby step. It's going that direction. Be careful. You know, we're kind of
walking right into it, and then you have our all the people who are falling for this. Hey, let's try socialism here because it'll be great. We'll just do it different and make it better.
Do it different. We won't make all those mistakes.
Oh man, we have to take a really quick break, and we'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Chen. We're obviously chatting about China, and if you have any complaints about the show, I guess you could contact the Chinese Communist Party. Apparently, they're mostly everywhere and available.
Apparently, they're listening,
and you could tell them you're not happy with it. But we're going to keep talking about it. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, WeThePeopleRadio.us. I had heard that song before. I just didn't think of it. Nice one. That was added by our engineer. Thanks, Jason. All right. Dr. Chen, what have we missed besides looking maybe a little more at the, I don't even know if it's parallels anymore, but how we are ushering in the United States. How about this? What do you see in some of these other countries? Like, I look at some of these European Union countries and the things that they're going through. And
unfortunately,
kind of having it too.
A lot further along.
Yeah.
They were, you know, a lot further along than the United States. We're very lucky that you know, this current administration is, you know, turning away from this. In your station, if the 8 more years of, you know, Democrat administration, I don't know whether you'll survive or not. You've probably, you know, driven out of existence. So I want to recommend something, but you might have heard of, June might have suggested this to you. Have you heard of the 9 commentaries on the Chinese Communist Party?
No.
Nope.
Ah.
I you slipped that link. By me.
Yeah. It's a series of 9 commentaries on the way of how the Chinese Communist Party operates. And that is somewhat difficult to understand because it has a lot to do with the Chinese situation. Yet, that is one series of commentary that is very worth reading, and it will open our eyes. And this I highly recommend. It will wake up a lot of people. And so I will...
Actually, if you just put into a search engine 9 commentaries, it immediately self-completes on the Communist Party. So, apparently we're the last ones to get the memo.
That is one powerful complication. You know, the CCP, whenever you make some kind of comment on it, you will respond, you know. Like hacking your station is your way to respond, right? But this 9 commentary, ever since its publication in 2004, and for the past 15 years, the CCP has no answer for it. That's how much this commentary has revealed in the nature of the CCP. That it has no answer for it. And that, you know, for a Chinese like myself, who has lived, gone through what the real communism is like, it's very easy for me to see through what's going on here. But of course, that involves a wake-up, a process that I was educated the communist way. I was given misinformation. But fortunately, when I come to this country, I get exposed to facts. So facts is number one, right? And that's why I say media. I cannot emphasize enough how important media is. You know, media is not just regular business. So for one to wake up, then you need facts. And that's why the Chinese Communist Party controls the internet. It just had this great firewall, a gray wall. And that's why I think the Trump administration is so right when they put the internet freedom as a key element into this trade negotiation. That's brilliant, right? So, facts, right? But then, I'm given the same facts as many other Chinese students. And why are they not wake up? Well, you also need the second element. That's your conscience, your courage. And the human part of it, you know, I mentioned earlier right now that it's a lot easier to, you know, to govern millions of animals, right, or billions, right? And we are right now at the great conflict of dehumanizing versus, you know, keep humanity. The communism And the socialism movement is trying to dehumanize humans. And, you know, our, you know, traditional way, conservative way, our conservative Republican, you know, the conservatives represent the traditional way, that upholds our humanity. And it's also a conflict of love and hate. We talk about the hatredism and the love, right? And this is what we're going through. And facts and conscience, those two will wake up people. And those, you require those two. And I'm very fortunate that I was able to make that choice. It wasn't an easy choice. And here is a little story that when I first came to the United States, because I shared about my mother's father, my grandfather, before I came to the United States, he was educated in France. He was one of the earliest Chinese students to be educated in a Western country. And so because of that, he was persecuted severely. I share that, you know, his story, that when I was about to leave China, he told me to stay away from politics, which I did. Okay? So I was just trying to mind my own business, just studying hard. And actually, there were student movement even before the 1989, there was 1987. So there were students at that time already, involved in that. I stayed away. My friends trying to seek me out to participate. I actually ran away. I hid myself. Nobody can find me because I knew what that is. I tried away from politics. But then in 1989, I can no longer stay away from it. But a key event is when I called my parents. Because I want to be involved, but I want to hear what my parents say. And fortunately, my parents say, "Well, just follow the majority." Well, it's not. I don't think they did not.
You don't seem like that kind of guy.
What?
You just don't seem like that kind of guy.
No,
it doesn't seem like you would be good at that.
At that time, I was okay. It's just by chance that I don't think they knew what they're saying, okay, and they were just playing safe. And so they say, okay, just follow the majority. Well, the majority at that time was on the side of the student. And so it was like I got a green light to participate.
Oops.
Well, once I got a green light, there's no return. But I can think that it's completely possible, right, that if they say, just mind your own business, then I think I will have a hard time get participated. Right? So that, and then later experience gave me a important recognition that even as free Chinese in the United States, even when we become American citizens, we have naturalized citizens, we are not free. As long as we have family members in China, we're not free.
Yeah,
because
I was going to ask you about that.
The government couldn't control us. They couldn't control us, but they will control our family members. And that's what a large number of Chinese Americans are facing. Even if you don't have family member in China, well, you may have business interest in China. Anything that the regime can control, they will use it to control you.
Nothing's off limits.
Early on, early on, I already recognized that even we are in a free country, we're not free. And later, I start to expand that. Even you're not Chinese, even you have no family member in China, you may still not be free. If you're doing business in China, are you free?
Yeah, not really.
No, because they're going to lean on you if they can.
And the other group, I know this happens in lots of countries, but the other group that made that very, very clear were the guys we've talked to several times from the Organization of Iranian American Communities. And they have relatives who are living in exile, and they had come on about the time we signed the Iran deal, and they said if they do that and they give them all that money, they'll execute all the political prisoners, all our relatives will be killed. And I mean, it's just something people in this country are totally unfamiliar with because we haven't done things like that at this point that we know of. I have to take a quick break, and we'll come right back with our guest, Dr. Chen. We're chatting about China today. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
See by your eyes, you must be lying. When you think I don't have a clue, baby, you're crazy. If you think that you can fool me, because I've seen that movie too.
Kind of a slow song, but you know, it might be a good national anthem at some point in the future. Maybe an addendum at some point. It's like, oh yeah, we heard about this. This happened in other countries. We don't want any, thank you. I don't know. So Dr. Chen, as you're watching all this stuff happening in this country, it's gotta be pretty creepy. If these guys get what they want, where do you go from here?
Well, as bad as it is, it could have been much worse. If it's not for one group of courageous Chinese, that's the Falun Gong practitioners. The Chinese Communist Party has spent at its height a quarter of national resources on the persecution of Falun Gong. Of course, it hasn't succeeded. In fact, in its 70 years of history, this is the only time that the Chinese government had not succeeded in putting down a non-conforming group. Just imagine if that regime can put down that group and then use that resources against the United States, against the rest of the world, what it would be like. That group, the courageous Falun Gong practitioner, also has helped to wake up large number of Chinese citizens away from the indoctrination, venomous indoctrination of the CCP. Right now, there are over 300 million, close to 400 million Chinese citizens renouncing their, membership or their alliance with the CCP affiliate organizations. And that is really their declaration to conscience. And also in the United States, Falun Gong practitioner formed a performing group called Shenyin. You might have heard of it. Every year, this group come up with a new program toward the world. This is sound Chinese, a dance and sing group. But somehow their program, the message they carry, wake up so many people from what's going on. And so these are, I see the hope. And also I see the hope in the wake up of conservatism. That what we're conservative, I mean, we stay true to the traditional value. The values has not been corrupted, has not deviated from what we came from. Right? And I see that as a hope. And I also think it's so important that we give more opportunity to the public to know what's going on in China. There's one important thing that not even the world still doesn't know right now. Even now, they don't know that we think China is the second largest economy, and no one talk about. Probably don't even recognize the reality of the Chinese economy. So here I just want to touch very briefly at a very shallow level. That is, you know, communism is called so-called public ownership. And non-communism, like in the United States, in Europe, they're private ownership, right? And so after the former Soviet East Europe bloc country, they defeated or the communism failed there. There was a transition from public ownership to private ownership. The same transition, even though the Chinese regime calls itself to carry on an economic reform, well, the reform has taken China to a dead end of another ownership that no one has talked about it. No one probably recognizes it. It's a third kind of ownership, the power ownership. It's neither public nor private. The so-called public ownership is state ownership. Right? But the so-called reform, economic reform, has transitioned what used to be owned by the state into a few hands of powerful politicians. Right now, there are probably 200 families, political family in China, owns the whole China. It's a power ownership. Ownership, the type of ownership determines the economic mold of the society. So private ownership dictates to a market economy. The public or state ownership dictates what we call planned economy or command economy. Right? The power ownership in China dictates neither. China is neither a planned economy nor a market economy. It's a plundering economy. Because these powerful political families, they divide up the China, and they own the government. So the government is used by them not for planning. So there's no planned economy. Right? They use government to plunder more public resources. And the private ownership is no match to the state power. The world may not have paid much attention to several important CEO resignation from top private-owned company, but that's the result of private ownership no match to public or the state power. Right? So it's not a market economy either. So China's economy is really going towards a ruin, and that is not well recognized yet. And I don't know where it would go. I'm hopeful that this trade negotiation will help China, because when President Trump demanded China to have structure change in its economy, that structure change may save China's economy from ruin. But we have to, our economists, academic, better to pay attention to this power ownership in China. It's a terrible thing. It's a worse thing. That's possible. Yet we are far from recognizing it, and that's the danger of it.
Yeah, they basically never talk about that.
No. It is the economic interests prevent them from seeing it, from talking about it. In fact, not only they don't talk about it. I remember, 5-6 years ago, it's very popular, the so-called China model, the Beijing consensus, books like When China Rules the World, this kind of thing. Well, it's once popular. And think about it. Free world, leader of the free world, singing eulogy to barbarism, to the CCP. It's a scary side. Why? Business interest.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because we're doing business with that barbaric regime. We're engaged in that plundering economy. We're ripping Chinese people off. Well, how do we justify to sing eulogy to it? It's a good thing. Right?
Yeah.
It's a good thing. One more quick break and we'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Chen. He's going to be with us till the top of the hour, so we've got like 10 minutes. Can you believe it? You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I can't do everything, well, I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I'll find with everyone. Oh, what I would do to have the kind of strength it takes to stand before a giant. With just a sling and a stone, surrounded by the sound of 1,000 warriors, shaking in their armor, wishing they'd have had the strength to stand. But the giant's calling out my name and he laughs at me, reminding me of all the time.
stripes, tried before and failed. The giant keeps on telling me, time and time again, boy, you never win. You never win. But the voice of truth tells me a different story. The voice of truth says, do not be afraid. And the voice of truth says, this is for my glory. Out of all the voices calling out to me, I will choose to listen and believe the voice of truth.
There, that can be your theme song.
Oh.
Dr. Jan, I had a question before we get off the Falun Gong. You said there were like 300,000 or 300 million followers. As with everything else, how do you know that the CCP isn't totally infiltrated in that organization?
They did.
Oh, well, there you go.
So you just, it's hard.
Yeah.
And actually, there's 100 million. The Falun Gong was brought to the public in 1992. In China, I can say this. Any group larger than 1,000 people, if there's not a Chinese spy in it, there's the government spy in it, that would be a miracle.
It's just right. not a very good group.
I'm not too worried about them.
If you don't have any good spies in your group, you kind of stink at what you're doing.
Yeah. So here is what I go through. This is a personal story. I tell you how far the CCP has gone to infiltrating all the groups. Right? So in the end, in the winter of 1991, actually, the winter of 1991, before 1992, right? So, IFCSS, our organization, was invited by, at that time, still USSR, the Soviet Union's Youth Committee, to visit Soviet Union. It was a big deal. The Chinese government tried to stop it. But in the end, Gorbachev and Shevardnadze got involved. So we were able to make our trip. Anyway, that was itself a long story. But I just get to the end of it. So before we conclude our trip, our host, because I was in charge of, you know, interacting with our host, get me into get myself and the president of our organization into a room, the two, you know, and they tell us there's a spy, Chinese spy in your group. It's a 16 people delegation. This delegation represents Independent Federation of Chinese Student Scholars, a pro-democracy organization opposed to CCP. And these 16 people were supposed to be selected from this group. Right? But how did they find out there's a spy in it? Well, there's something to do, has something to do with me. But I didn't intentionally do it. So there was an event that we participate that concluded early. So we have about 45 minutes extra, less than an hour extra time before we go to the next event. Right? So we were taking in this tourist bus to go to that event, but we have about an hour to burn. And so our Soviet host on the way just told me that, okay, not far from here there is a this largest mall of the world. Do you want to see it? You have about an hour to burn. I say, okay, let's do it. I mean, so I was sitting next to it, so our tour bus took a quick turn.
Right.
And so we were there for half an hour. There's nothing to see anyway. It's a gigantic mall, but it's empty. There's, you know, no crowd. So
takes the fun out of it.
For about 40 minutes or so, we were there. Right? And then we were actually followed by the KGB. Our group was followed by them. So because our bus took a sudden detour, the KGB car lost us. And then within that 40 minutes or so, the Chinese consulate informed the KGB, so they're in this mall. Okay. And so they finally track us down in the mall. Right. So what happened is that one of the 16 delegation members informed the CCP, informed the Chinese consulate or embassy in Moscow where we are. We never figure out who that person is, but we know there's a spy in. So that's how extensive that is.
Wow.
So pretty much if there are two people together anywhere in China, one of them's a spy.
And it's not me.
And if it's not you.
Yeah. So now
that's stressful.
So go back to Falun Gong. Right. So Falun Gong, once it was brought to the public, it became popular very quickly. And in the first couple of years, it grew to a large following with millions of people following. So the Chinese authorities sent people to go into a group, pretend to be practitioner. Right? Many of this story, it's quite a lot, actually. So some practitioner later would review, I was a Chinese agent. I was a government agent. I was sent to, you know, be a member of yours and to report what illegal activity, what's bad about your group, and then, try to have something go against you. But after following you for this, long time, I realized this group is pure good. And so, I turned myself from a government agent to a true, genuine practitioner. So such kind of experience, such kind of sharing, there are a lot of it. So the government did try to infiltrate. And
just fumbled the ball there, picked the wrong guy.
Yeah. Well, but who knows? I mean, that may be some people just turned into true practitioners. Some people did not. In fact, in my hand, I have a physical, I have a letter written by one of the so-called practitioners to the Chinese authority. It fell into my hand is just another story. But I know that we know that we're infiltrated. But the thing about Falun Gong is this is a free-to-come, free-to-go group. Right? We have no regulation. We have no membership or anything like that. Right. There's no regulation. There's no rule. And if you want to come, you practice, and you follow, then welcome. And there's no... We have no mechanism to prohibit people from spying for the Chinese government. But meanwhile, we are not afraid either, because all we do are above board. Our activity, a participative public, the teaching of Falun Gong are online, freely downloadable. And everything is public. This is... But of course, the CCP do not believe it.
Oh, they figure there's a whole underground where you guys are secretly.
Yeah.
It's a front. They figure it's a front. Well, because they're up to no good, so they figure you've got to be up to no good.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's the only thing they know.
Yeah. So there's a fair amount of a misunderstanding towards Falun Gong. Bruce Moran, I saw his sharing with American intelligence.
Right, from a national security perspective.
They view us a threat.
Sure. You guys are good. Everybody doesn't like you. You must be doing something right, actually. It's kind of a kind of a badge of honor. I hate to say this, but we have literally burned through 2 hours again.
Wow.
I know. It's crazy. We really appreciate you coming on with us. This is a wonderful perspective and extremely timely. And I'm sure we'll be chatting with you again very soon. Thank you very much. Our guest has been Dr. Chen. You can find everything about this program at WeThePeopleRadio.us.